You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder 1v1. It's the new arm of the Allocation Disorder podcast where we will talk with different personalities from around American soccer. Today, we start off with a big one, U.S. Men's National Team coach Greg Berhalter. Greg, thanks for joining me and helping me launch this podcast. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's going to be a great podcast.
Well, let's jump right into it. The Premier League starts tomorrow, Greg, and I know you watch as much soccer as possible, so I thought we get you started with a prediction. Who wins it? You know, we saw Manchester City, Liverpool going at it the last few years. I'm guessing that's going to be it again. Do you have a winner?
No, I agree. I think the usual suspects are going to be right up there. Liverpool and Man City are obviously favorites to contend for the title again. But then I think there's some dark horses. Arsenal, I think, is going to make a step up. They've strengthened their squad. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do. Chelsea is a team that it always finds a way to compete and hang around. And I think Man United will be much improved this year. So looking forward to another fantastic season in the Premier League. And just, you know, anytime you see those big five teams matching up, you know, you're in for a treat with the game.
Well, American fans are going to have another treat when we're watching the Premier League this year. There's more Americans than we've seen in a long while playing in the Premier League. You mentioned Chelsea. I want to start with the name that we all think of when we think about the Americans in the Premier League right now, and that's Christian Pulisic. There's been a lot of change at Chelsea. Raheem Sterling obviously coming in to challenge for playing time. Last year was difficult at times for Christian and finding game time. Are you concerned at all? What have discussions been like with Christian ahead of the season? And what do you think he needs to do to maybe secure a bit more consistency at Chelsea this season?
You know, I think if there's one player in our player pool that really understands how to deal with adversity and deal with the competition at a big club, it's Christian. And he's been doing that, you know, at a young age at Dortmund, being a big club in Germany, moving to Chelsea, and just clawing his way into playing time and results and performance and goals and assists. And he has a great mindset about it this year. And so, you know, I'm excited to see how he embraces the challenge. Anytime you're at a big club, there's always going to be competition for spots. Anytime you're an attacking player at a big club, there's always going to be competition for spots. But the way that he's equipped himself to deal with that, he's going to be in a really good spot. And I can see him, you know, certainly performing at a high level and certainly making a big impact at Chelsea this year.
I want to stick with Chelsea for a second because yesterday it was announced that Gaga Slonina, the 18-year-old goalkeeper from the Chicago Fire, had completed his transfer to Chelsea for $10 million. We've seen Gaga this year in MLS, an exciting young prospect, a very young goalkeeper, so we know a lot of growth still to come. But I wonder from your perspective what your hopes are for him when he gets to Chelsea in January and you know, how does this move and how does Gaga's progression influence how you're thinking about the World Cup roster? Because there's a big difference between bringing an 18-year-old goalkeeper and giving a young prospect that experience of being at a tournament versus having a voice in the locker room like Sean Johnson, who's been around a long time and is a veteran presence in a very young team, or even Ethan Horvath, who is going to be starting in the championship this year.
Yeah, so the first part of the question, you know, Gaga is a really level-headed kid for being so young. It's been really nice having conversations with him, working with him in camp. So I think, you know, he understands exactly what he's doing. He understands the importance of game time. He understands the importance of, you know, just playing to continue to develop. With young players, in particular, it's hard to forecast the future. You don't know. And, you know, anyone who says they know exactly what a young player's development path, you know, is wrong, because it's really hard to predict how a young player is going to develop. And goalies even more difficult. And when you see a young player, particularly a goalkeeper position, playing regularly, it's rare. And, you know, he's done such a good job to get on the field, to keep his place on the field, and to perform. The next level for him is going to be when he goes to Chelsea, what pathway do they have for him to continue to develop? And that's, you know, we've talked about this, Paul, in private conversations, but just how, you know, how important it is for a player to have a pathway where they can go and get on the field week in and week out at a level that's going to challenge them but not overwhelm them, and then continue to progress as they get the level, as they get the speed of the game, and as they become accustomed to the level they're at. So that's going to be the most interesting thing for me to see, Chelsea's plan for him to continue to develop and get on the field and play games.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea that you brought up recently, which is, you know, how soon is too soon for some players to move to Europe? The idea of, you know, being in a league, dominating that league, and then taking the next step. And that's kind of counterbalanced by two things. There's the business aspect of it, where the club is, you know, if they get the right offer, they're probably not going to pass on it. And then, you know, a couple years ago, I went and visited Bayern Munich when Chris Richards was there in the academy. Alphonso Davies had just moved. And speaking to them at Bayern, they felt like the sooner they could get their hands on American players, the faster they could get them used to the pace of play in Europe. Where do you fall when you think about wanting your players to hit ceilings before they move? How do you kind of balance that other side of trying to get them challenged at that higher pace of play that maybe allows the adaptation to happen at 20, 21, 22 when they're starting to move into their primes?
Yeah, I can probably understand big clubs, you know, wanting to get the kids earlier and then, you know, put them in their system and let them develop, because it's very hard to play at a big club like that. You know, it's very, you know, rare to get a guy that can play at Bayern Munich. But I think the right progression would be for a guy to be performing really well at his level in Major League Soccer, his next step being a club where he's going to play week in and week out at that level. And then perhaps after that, go to Bayern Munich. And yeah, it may cost Bayern Munich more in the long run, but I think that, you know, for the player, it really benefits him to be able to continue to progress and play. The worst thing you could see is when their progress is stalled. And we have a number of guys that are in Europe now, and all of a sudden, you know, they're you know, MLS is being called to take these guys back, right? And that's what you want to avoid. A guy going over there lasting a year and then coming back to MLS and basically starting from scratch.
Well, if we picked one of the ideal paths of kind of hitting your ceiling and moving on, Brendan Aaronson might be a good example of that. I just got an email earlier today. A study was done that showed that Brendan Aaronson had the fastest speed over the longest distance of any player in the Champions League last year. And he's taking a step up this year with Leeds. Tyler Adams moving to Leeds as well. We've seen Brendan play in different positions for you with the national team, centrally, out wide. What do you hope to see from him in his progression at Leeds? And I would ask the same of Tyler Adams. When you're watching Leeds, what are you hoping to see from your two USMNT players?
So with Brendan, you know, it's going to be important to see how he finishes his offensive actions, right, with goals and assists at the Premier League level. You know, it's a very, very difficult level. You know, it will really, I think, increase his chances of being on the field of the World Cup if he can do it at the Premier League. That's the best league in the world. So that's what we're going to be looking at is, you know, is he able to perform offensive actions in the Premier League at a really high level? With Tyler, you know, for us, it's a combination of things. I think defensively, continue to work on his ball winning, which he's, you know, he's bordering on elite at. He's a very high level ball winning. Press after loss is huge for him as well. He really helps the group, you know, maintain possession when he's able to press the ball immediately after losing the ball. And then it's, you know, in buildup, can he get on the ball? Can he be breaking lines, finding attacking players in between the lines or behind the line? You know, that's one thing that, you know, we've been on him about is, you know, turning to put face forward, passing forward, taking more risks with the ball, with his passing.
Yeah, I want to pivot away from the Premier League for a second to the Bundesliga, which is also starting, because there's a player that I've talked a lot about and I've written a lot about in the kind of question mark that hovers over the team and the influence that this player can have when healthy, and that's Gio Reyna. We've seen when he steps on the field, like at the Azteca, what he's capable of doing, how he can change games. And obviously he's had injuries that made him less available during qualifying than we would have all liked. But because he's such a special player and has so much potential, if he's healthy, he can play centrally for you. He can play on the wing. It creates a whole different type of lineup dilemma. A good dilemma, I would guess, Greg, of choosing between guys like Brendan and Weston, Eunice, Gio, Tim Weah, weighing them all up. How do you see Gio fitting into this team? And, you know, if he is healthy in September, do you think you have to see him centrally? Do you want to see him centrally? What do we should we expect from a healthy Gio Reyna in this team, since we saw it so rarely through qualifying?
Well, Gio's a difference maker. We know that. We know that he can make a difference when he's on the ball, with his final pass, with his finishing actions. He's really good at that. So that's one thing that we're excited to see. How he gets back to form, back to fitness, and then applies his game to what Dortmund's doing this year with their newish coach, right? Not completely new. So and then in terms of where we play him, that variation, the flexibility that guys like him, Gio gives us, Brendan gives us, Malik Tillman give you, you can put them in a number of different positions and they can perform at a high level. And, for that, it gives us a variation in both offense and defense, because if we want a more defensive formation, we can choose other players. If we want to go more offensive, we can choose, the guys that I mentioned. So it's a problem, but it's a good problem to have when you're forced with, those difficult decisions and how you want to tilt the team in a more offensive or defensive look.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Well, for most people, summer is a vacation time. For the players, they had a little time off, and then preseason starts. And for American fans, that means preseason tours. And Greg, you got kind of involved in preseason tours. We saw photos of you with Ancelotti, with Allegri. You saw Real Madrid, Barcelona, Manchester City, Juventus. I wonder what's that like for you as a soccer manager to be kind of taking these trips? What are you trying to get out of those trips? Did you have time to meet with those teams? What did you pull out of that experience?
I think the most important thing is relationships. The club, to build relationships with the clubs where our players are at. I think kind of integrating, your ideas with their ideas and seeing how their views on the player, both from a, from a, a playing standpoint. Then the medical teams, you know, our doctors were there, our physios were there, our high performance people were there, trying to integrate, you know, everything together that, you know, we understand the complete picture of our player, both on a club level and a national team level. And then it's just about learning. You know, I got to sit down with Allegri, with Angelotti, with coaching staff from Man City, and coaching staff of Barcelona. And it's just, I think it's a great moment to hear their ideas, hear how they view the game. You know, when you talk about the experience of Angelotti and Allegri, I mean, these are guys that, you know, have been around the game for a long, long time. And trying to learn from them and you know, explaining a little bit about the international game and then just hearing from them. But what struck me the most is just, you know, the soccer world, how generous people are in the soccer world and how it is a small community and, you know, how these people are working at big clubs, but they still have time for, you know, for conversations and to sit down and you know, and talk one-on-one.
Well, I wonder especially about sitting down with Barcelona and a player like Xavi. You spent the first 6 years of your career in Holland. I feel like I interpret that a lot of your soccer style kind of comes out of the Dutch influences. We know the Dutch influences that existed for those Barcelona teams with Xavi. Is it just a thrill maybe to sit with a player like that and talk about? Because I feel like there's similar ways that you guys see the game and maybe the ideal way the game is played.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a heavy influence on the positional game in Barcelona. And that's something that, you know, you're constantly, I think, battling with a little bit in your own mind of okay, how is our formation going to stack up against the opponent's formation? How can we take advantage of the position of our players to unbalance the opponent? And then, you know, how does that apply to the real game? You know, I think, you know, you hear stories speaking to them about how important some positions are. And when he's talking about Busquets and how important he is and what they do and how he's a facilitator to get other players the ball, talking about, you know, sometimes, you know, when them moving their fullback inside to have a wide winger and when the fullback's wide, the winger comes inside. And these are all little details that I think make the game easier to play. And it's just understanding that. And to hear him, you know, talking about that, it is very similar to stuff we're doing. You know, he does it at an extremely high level with Barcelona. And it's interesting to see how he gets his players to buy into it.
You know, the Allocation Disorder podcast, typically, Greg, we like to dive into the nitty gritty of MLS roster rules, roster building, how to think about putting a team together. We love, you know, we love things like the discovery rule and the allocation order. We're big fans of it. Not really. But you were very good at building teams in MLS, at working around the salary cap, at using those different methods. And I wonder what's more challenging or even what challenge did you relish more? Kind of building a team within the MLS cap where you have a whole global market to find a player that fits your position and what you want out of that position, or having this set U.S. men's national team pool and trying to find the right pieces that fit together, not just maybe on the field like you were talking about, depending on how you want to play, but in the locker room and how each personality works together. What's more difficult? What's more fun?
They're just completely different challenges. And what I like about both of them is you need to be creative. You need to be flexible. And you need to apply those two ideas into how you're going about your job. With a club, you know, the flexibility is, you know, you can look around the whole world and sometimes, you know, you have to explore, areas that other people may not be looking at. You have to get creative with how you're using your cap numbers. You know, I remember when we first paid, you know, Harrison Affle $300,000, people thought we were crazy that we're playing a fullback $300,000. You know, it was like unheard of to pay a fullback that much money. And he was that important to what we're doing, that, to our system, that we thought it was worth it. And it was just, you know, how we value, you know, each profile in what we're doing. With the national team, the flexibility comes with, You do have a fixed pool, so the playing style has to be flexible. The playing, you know, your formation has to be flexible. You don't know until you're in camp if guys are coming because of injury. You know, this last window, you know, is well documented. We had, you know, five guys pull out on the last day, and that's just how it goes. And so you have to be flexible there and willing to adapt and adapt quickly because you have no time. So they're both great challenges. I think they both develop you as a manager. And you know, it's, they're different, but both have the rewards for sure.
Yeah. You mentioned that flexibility in roster building, you're going to need it, especially at this World Cup. Usually there's a little window between the end of the European season and the start of a World Cup when it's in the summer and guys with 2 week injuries can recuperate. You've got a training camp. This time you're going to have a week between the last game in Europe, the first game of the World Cup against Wales. How difficult does that make what would typically be the preparation for a World Cup and kind of knowing what you're going to have to work with?
Yeah, I think if you look at people get freaked out because it's the magnitude of the World Cup, right? But it's everything we've been doing in qualifying windows, right? It's actually, we have more time than we've had in qualifying windows. So if you approach it that way and you approach it that, you know, this is just part of what we've been doing for the last 2 years, it's a lot easier to deal with. And we can turn this into an advantage because we've been doing this for the last, you know, year and a half. So it is what it is. We're not going to be able to change that. I think that the one hiccup in my mind is going to be some of the MLS-based players who will maybe have been off for a month, you know, 5 weeks. That could be more problematic. And, you know, not having a big enough selection of that group that maybe have a full training camp. So trying to get creative around that. How do you train 8 players or 7 players? You know, that's going to be the interesting thing that we're working on.
I wonder, Greg, too, you know, when you think about the forward position, I think we're all wondering, you know, who emerges. You've got Jesus Ferreira that played at the end of qualifying. He adds so much in kind of the soccer side of things where the question has been, can he finish at the highest levels? Daryl DK, Josh Sargent in the championship, Jordan Pefok now playing in the Bundesliga. Is this going to be similar to 2010 where you see guys like Herc Gomez and Robbie Finley, you know, make it over Brian Ching based on form? Is it going to be down to just that, or does it come down to, okay, we need someone of a certain skill set, so these guys are competing with each other, and certain guys of another skill set, so these 2 or 3 guys are competing against one another?
Yeah, I think that situation may be a little bit different because we don't have, none of our strikers are established internationals, right? We don't have any, none of them have, you know, more than 20 caps. So they're all kind of in the same boat. And now it's for us to look at, you know, who's in form at the time, who fits what we're doing from a game model standpoint, from a, you know, an opponent specific standpoint, and who fits into the team from a cultural standpoint, and just looking at all three of those things, evaluating that. Ideally, you know, we'd have all 5 of the guys you mentioned plus Ricardo Pepi would be scoring, you know, 15 goals from now until in the World Cup. That would be great. You know, I'm not sure that's going to happen, and we just have to keep our eye on it. We've worked with all, the good thing is all of them have been in camp. We've worked with all of them, and now it's just continue to evaluate them. It's, you know, the idea that we can have a conversation now that's going to determine what happens in November in that position, you know, is crazy. It's not going to happen, right? We got to wait and see, and we're patient enough, and we'll do that.
Last couple questions, Greg. What are you thinking about your own future after the World Cup? We're not that far off from the start of the tournament, which means we're not far off from the end of the tournament. What do you want to do after the World Cup ends? Do you want to stay for 2026? Are you thinking about you know, maybe what comes next?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult question because, you know, a lot of my focus right now, all of my focus right now is, you know, how are we going to be the best possible team in the World Cup? And, you know, I've always been the type of person that I don't get ahead of myself. I put everything into what I'm doing at the moment. And, you know, what happens, happens. I don't get too stressed about thinking about the future. It's just not who I am. So you know, there's the side of it of, you know, coaching the World Cup in 2026 is appealing because it is in our country. And, you know, thinking about going back to club soccer is also appealing because I love to work every day. I love to be on the field. So either way, you know, again, the focus is really on, you know, how are we going to get the most out of this group for 2022? And how are we going to be really perform at a good level at the World Cup?
All right. The last question, I want to have something of a book club come out of Allocation Disorder 1v1. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, Greg, if you could recommend one book to somebody, not just what you're reading now, or maybe it is, but a book that, you know, you really love to read and that's your one recommendation to somebody, what's that book? I know you're an avid reader, so you probably have a few in the arsenal.
I know, you put me on the spot a little bit here, man. There's a book, let me think about this. I think that there's a book by Dov Seidman. It's called How, and it, to me, it's a really interesting book on creating a culture, creating a sustainable culture in business, and you can apply it to sport. I think it's based on you know, the study of philosophy. So it is a deep book, but I think it's definitely worth a read for sure.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that recommendation. And again, appreciate you helping us kick off Allocation Disorder 1v1. You can find us on the new Athletic Soccer Show podcast feed. Thank you so much, Greg.
Thanks for having me, Paul.